Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the bottom of Chaf Amud Bet. Mishnah begins, Zeh Omer Tav Yadi, V'Zeh Katav Yado Shel Chaveri. This is my signature. He's verifying the signature on the document. And he says, that is also the signature of my friend. V'Zeh Omer, and the other aide says, Zeh Ktav Yadi, this is my signature. V'Zeh Ktav Yado Shel Chaveri, and that is his signature. Hayreilu Ne'emanim. They are believed. Here you have them testifying both about their own signatures as well as the signature of their friend. Zeomer Zektav Yadi, Vizeomer Zektav Yadi. If each one of them verifies their own signature, then Srichim Litzarefi Mehem Acher Divrei Rabbi. Rabbi requires a third aide to come along and to bolster each of their positions. In the ratio of the Mishnah, you had two aidim to each signature because the individual testified by his own signature, as well as the signature of his friend. But in the case where he only testifies about his own signature, we need another aide there to join each one of the signatories to say that their signatures are good. Chamim say they don't need that. Once they've identified their own signature, that is sufficient. Because a person's believed to say that this is my handwriting or this is my signature, I don't need anybody else to verify my own signature. So now the Gemara explains the machloket here between Rabbi and the Chachamim. Kishitimtzel Omar. If you look at this carefully, L'divrei Rabbi, according to Rabbi, Aktav Yadan Hein Me'idim. They are testifying with regards to their own handwriting or the signatures on the document. L'divrei Chachamim, Amanei Shebishtar Hein Me'idim. They are testifying about the actual amount in the shtar itself. The way the Gemara presents it, according to Rabbi, since the testimony is not about the original loan, but rather about the signatures themselves, for any type of maaseh beitin or verification, you need two edim. So here, if you're trying to verify signatures, you need two edim for each of the signatures. On the other hand, the Chachamim are saying, all the verification does here is verifies that which is said in the shtar is correct. So if I get each aide to testify about his own signature, then they verify basically what's written in the shtar, that this did take place, that this certainly was what happened. Now Rashi over here, if you look carefully in Rashi, the Divrei Chachamim, Rashi says, Anachnu ra'inu ha-milveh v'chatamnu. We saw the loan and we signed on it. According to Rashi, the Rambam, and others, the testimony according to the Chachamim is literally about the original loan. It's not about their signatures. They have to actually remember the original loan, the original transaction, and they're literally testifying about the original transaction according to the Chachamim. Rashi takes that literally. But Tosafot on the other hand says, near to the Rabbi, afilu omrim beferush, demeidim ha-maneh shebishtar, even if they explicitly say that they're testifying about the maneh shebishtar, it's still as if they are testifying about the signatures. V'chein the Rabbonon, and same with the Rabbonon, afilu omrim behedja, ta'aktav di'andam hei me'idim. Even according to the Chachamim, if they say specifically they're testifying about their signatures, we don't say that. But from Tosafot, it's clear that we're not asking the Edim to testify about the original transaction. We're simply saying that their testimony here does that. It's not that they have to remember it. Even if they don't remember the original transaction, as long as they can testify about their signatures now, it's as if they're just verifying what's written in the document. They're saying, whatever's written in this document, that is true, versus testifying about the signatures themselves. So it's a very, very different view of what the Chachamim are saying over here. According to Rashi and the Rambam especially, you literally have to remember what was in the shtar and the transaction, and that's what you're testifying about, the original transaction. According to Tosafot, it's just a derivative of testifying about the signatures, is that you are verifying the details of the shtar. You're not verifying your signature. Your signature, by definition, verifies the details of the shtar. But now that you have to remember the original transaction, not that you have to remember seeing whatever transpired here, you simply are verifying what's in the document. The document speaks for itself. And of course, there's a big nafkamino la'alocha between these two positions as to whether they deem need to remember the original transaction. According to Rashi, the Rambam, they do. According to Tosafot, they don't have to remember the original transaction because they're simply over here verifying that the document is a real document. And whatever is in it will speak for itself and that will dictate what we know about it. Mar says, Pshito. That seems pretty straightforward, that that's the difference in their opinions over here. That maybe you're going to Rabbi, he had some doubt about this. Are they going to testify about their signatures? Or are they testifying about the contents of the shtar itself? What's the difference? So then in the case where one of them dies, because then we will need two additional parties, independent parties, to come along and testify on his signature. Because otherwise you're going to end up with the fact that one aid is actually going to determine three quarters of the payment over here. V'hacha l'chumra, and we'd go to chumra in both cases. Kamash v'lon, that we don't say that. The rabbi mifshat pshitale, to him it's very straightforward. Ben l'kula ben l'chumra. Whether it's the kula l'chumra, over here they're testifying about their signatures. They are not testifying about the contents of the document. Now what the havamin of the Gemara is the possibility that rabbi says that this is a safek. And if it is a safek, then we would always go to chumra. What would be the chumra over here? If they're testifying about their signatures, then when one aide comes along and says, that's my handwriting, done. When he testifies about the other person's handwriting, and another aide comes along and testifies to verify that that is his handwriting, now you have two aidim testifying in a sense about each of the signatures. That's all they're testifying about. They're not testifying about the contents of the document. They're simply testifying about the signatures. Once I've testified about the signatures, that has implications for the document. But it's not that they are testifying about the transaction, about what's the content of the document. In that case, the aide that testifies about his own signature is believed. And then when he testified about his friend's signature, he's also believed. And then the third party that comes and verifies with them the other signature, we're fine. On the other hand, if you believe that it's maneshe b'shtar, that you're actually testifying about the contents of the document, then in that case, what will happen is that you have a real problem. The first aide comes along and says, that's my signature. He says, that's also my friend's signature. And then we bring in another party that says, you're right, that is his friend's signature. Now, what happened here? You have three aidim, but really, it's only two aidim. Because he testified his own signature and his friend's signature, and then you have that third party coming along and verifying with him. That means that in terms of the contents of the document, the first aide is telling you that 50% of this document is correct, or 50% of whatever is in this transaction is correct. Then when they come and testify about the second signature, that same aide is telling you that 50% of that 50% I'm testifying about, and then that outside aide is giving you the last 25% of the value. That means that one aide is granting 75% of the value of this content here he's testifying about. And we're relying on this one aide to grant 75% of the value of the shtar. Because he testifies his own signature, that's 50% of the value there. Because once you verify one signature, then that testifies about half the content here is correct, in a sense, because that signature is fine. Then when he testifies about his friend, then he's verifying another half of that 50%, which is 25%. He's granting 75% of the value. As Rashi says over here, we say, when we say, it's not so clear that that is what the pasuk means, but Rashi is telling us that because it's two aidim, each aid has to contribute equally to the transaction over here or to the establishment of the facts over here. And since each aid has got to grant 50% of the value of the transaction over here, where it would be 75% for this guy and 25% for that other aid, we're not going to let that go through. So that was the Gemara's Havamina, that according to Rabbi, if he really believed that the possibility that we would go to Chumrah in both cases, Chumrah when it meant testifying about the signatures, and the Chumrah when it meant testifying about the contents of the shtar, then in a case here where one of the Edim died, and one aide verifies his own signature and his friend's signature, and we bring in a third party, Rabbi would not allow that to go through, because too much weight is being borne by that single aide, because he's granting 75% of the value. The Kamash Malon is that we don't worry about that. Rabbi believes that we only testify about the Chatimat Eidim, Ben Lekula, Ben Lechumra. The Chumra will be that you need two Eidim for each one of the signatures. The Kula will be in this case, where he dies. One of the Eidim dies, one aide can testify of his own signature and his friend's signature, and then just bring in a third party and testify. Because again, he's not testifying about the contents of the shtar, they're just testifying about the signatures. And over there, in each case, he's testifying about a certain aspect of it. He's not creating 75% of the value to be moved. That will be the result, but that's not what he's testifying about. And that's what we believe that Rabbi's position is, ben l'kula ben l'chumra. Rabbi Yehuda Amrav, shnayim achatumim al ashtar, umeit echad mehem. As Rabbi Yehuda Amrav says, two people are signed on a shtar, and one of them dies. Tzrichim shnayim min ashuk la'id alav. We need two outside parties, independent parties, to come to testify, because bezu, Rabbi l'kula, v'rabbanon l'chumra. Over here, Rabbi would be l'kula and say you do not need that, whereas the Rabbanon will be the l'chumra and say that you do need that. V'leketrei el achad, mai. If we don't have two from the outside and only one, what do we do over here? It's a very interesting question of the Gemara. What do you mean? We can't do anything. This is the law. This is the rules. Okay, and you can't deal with it. Why is the Gemara so after deciding, okay, if we don't have two edim, which is the way you need to do it, what do you do over here? It's likely because we want a way to uphold documents. This is a very important factor over here because every document is signed. And every document, we want to be able to mekayim the document to verify or validate the documents. And if it's so difficult, because we need outside parties to come in when one of the edim dies, it's going to make it impossible to deal with these issues. So how do we make it easier to verify or validate documents so that, again, that the world of business works and people are not going to be now afraid to lend money or to sell things and have edim sign on the shtar because the validation will be so difficult? So, Amar Abaye, lichtov chatimat yadei achaspa v'shadilei bebebedina. The one aid that is still alive, what he will do is actually sign. He will sign a piece of, or shard of pottery, and then hand it into the Beit Din. That way, umechazik lebeidina, the Beit Din can verify his signature not through his testimony, but rather through validating the signature against another one of his signatures. So he signs it here, then Beit Din says, ah, these are two are the same, therefore we can validate his signature. Right, so that's a good question here, but you need two documents. Over there, you need two documents because they're documents that we don't know. Over here, we know he signed it. In the other case where we want two documents to verify is because we're worried about a forgery. So there we want two to verify that this really is the signature. In our case over here, we know that he's signing this. So we know that this is his signature. Now we just have to match it up with what's on the document. So over here, one will suffice because he's actually signing and we know he's signing right in front of us. The other case, we want to make sure that the other two signatures are the same and that he actually signed them. We don't have them in front of us. So now he signs, and Beit Din then verifies or validates it through his signature. Then he doesn't have to testify any longer about his own signature. Then he and the other witness can come along and testify about the second signature. So that's the way that we solve the problem if we only have one aid besides the person who signed on here, one of the signatories. The Dafko Chaspel. And that's only true that he should do this when he signs on a shard of pottery. Aval megiltolo. But on a piece of paper he should not sign. Dilma mishkachala inish delo male. Because maybe some untoward character will find his signature on the paper once they throw it out. Vikatavi lavei my deboy. And then he will write whatever he wants on top of it. Meaning that he'll generate a contract that has the signature. Because now he has the signature at the bottom and he can invent whatever he wants on top of it. Vitznan. If you pull out a paper in the person's handwriting, basically it says, I owe you, then he has got to pay. Now, he won't pay from encumbered property over here because there are no signatories to this. There are no witnesses to this. And in their day, there was no title company. There was nobody who could look up afterwards to make sure that this property wasn't encumbered. What did they rely on so that people knew properties were encumbered? Publicity. How do you get publicity? You get two edim to sign it, and you make it into a public affair so that everybody knows that the property is encumbered. So when things are quiet or secret, you can't encumber property because it won't be fair to anybody else. If you encumber the property, then how does anybody else know to avoid it? How does everybody else know not to lend this guy money anymore? So the only way we do it is if you sign with two edim. So over here, where he writes the IOU, and it's in his handwriting, you can claim the money from him as long as it's not encumbered property. But that will allow him to do this. So we don't want to allow you to write a signature and then leave it because there's a huge risk in that happening. Now, it's not so clear why or what the question about cheres is over here. Tosafot, first of all, says that if he signs on the top of a piece of paper, then it's not an issue as well because then you can't write a document. It's signed at the top. He can't write the contract and then have the signature be at the end. The signature will be before the document. So that's one way to solve the problem, even when you do it with paper. Others suggest that he writes something. He writes some meaningless things, like he writes the alphabet, and then he signs his name. So it's clear that you can't write anything before. It prevents it. That's another way to solve the problem. Others ask, and Tosfot raises the issue as well, which is that in other places we see signing on Kli Cheres is fine. Over here, the Gemara seems to indicate you sign on a piece of charred pottery because that would not be valid as a shtar. Well, why not? We know in other places that you can write a whole shtar on a piece of pottery. So there you have different answers. Tosafot over here talks about that over there it really wasn't a shtar. It was simply a document that they need for the moment, and it wasn't going to be a shtar that was kept around for the long term as a raya. For instance, a get. A get, you write the document to divorce. You don't need the document for the long term. Now, you do need it in the end. It can serve as a raya, a proof to the divorce. But that's not why it's written. It's written to create a divorce. And therefore, if you sign on the cheres, it's fine because that's all you need it for. You need it for that short duration, and it's good. Over here, where you're trying to write a document that's going to last for a long duration, then we worry about kli cheres for a number of reasons. Some say because it's easier to forge. That when you use kli cheres, it's much easier to forge a document or forge a signature on kli cheres. Because when you write on paper, it's smoother, and you have a much clearer view of what the signature is. On the other hand, when you write on kli cheres, it could be bumpy, it could be difficult to write on, and therefore the forgery is easier because you don't have as clear a signature. Others suggest that the kli cheres is because when they toss it away afterwards, it's going to crack. It's going to break. And therefore the signature will automatically, quote-unquote, dissolve because there won't be a signature. It'll crack into pieces. As opposed to paper, when you throw it away, it's still whole unless you rip it up. And if you rip the paper, maybe it would be the same thing. Or the Rabbeinu Tam suggests maybe because if you etch in cheres, that's when it's kasher. When you write on the cheres, it's problematic. So they all come up with different ways to separate or distinguish between the case here and other cases. But it's clear is that we don't want him signing in order to give verification of his signature and then that to get used against him later on. So you have to do it in a way that protects him when you use that signature, and that's what the Gemara is after over here. I'm going to review them. Shmuel, Alocha kedirei chachamim. Alocha is like the chachamim over here, and the Gemara asks an obvious question, Pshita. Yachid v'rabim, Alocha kerabim. Generally, we have the Klali Apsak, which found in the Gemara in Erevin and other places and Shas, is that when you have one versus the many win. We go after the rove. So over here, you have Chachamim versus Rabbi. Why would you even think that the Alocha should be like Rabbi? Ma'udatem Alocha kerabi mi'chaveiro. This is one of those principles of Psak in found in the Gemara Erevin, is that when Rabbi argues on an individual, he wins. He trumps. When it's one against one, Rabbi always trumps. So v'afilu mi'chaveirav, you would have thought maybe that's true not only when he is arguing on an individual, but even when he's arguing on a plurality, k'mashmalan, that that's not the case. That when it's Rabim against Rabbi, he does know we don't paskin that way, and that's what they're coming to clarify over here. That's only halacha Rabbi mi chaveiro, not halacha Rabbi mi chaveirav. Amarle Rav Chanana Barchia the Rav Yehuda. So we have either Rav Chanana Barchia saying this to Rav Yehuda, Amrila. Some say it was Rav Huna Bar Yehuda the Rav Yehuda. That it was Rav Huna, the son of Rav Yehuda, saying to Rav Yehuda, Amrila Rav Chia Bar Yehuda the Rav Yehuda. Mi amar Shmuel Hachi. Did Shmuel really say this? The question is being posed over here to Rav Yehuda, who is a Talmid Mufak of Shmuel. Throughout Shas, we find Rav Yehuda quoting Rav and Shmuel. He was a Talmid by both of them. But Rav Yehuda is one of the main individuals who brings us the Mesorah from Shmuel. So they're challenging this. They're going back to Rav Yehuda and saying, did Shmuel really say this? Because right before, I'm Rav Yehuda, Meshmuel, Lacha Gedivrei Chachamim. So now they're going back to Rav Yehuda and saying, you're quoting Shmuel, but we have other memra from Shmuel that seem not to indicate that. We had a document that came out of the Beit Din of Shmuel. And it said in it, Rav Anan Barchia was one of the signatories to this contract. He came and testified about his own signature, as well as the other signature on the document. Umanu, and who's the other signature? Rav Chanan bar Rabbo. Umedaata Rav Chanan bar Rabbo, and also Rav Chanan bar Rabbo showed up, Fasira Chetimat Yadei, and he verified his signature, Vadachadime, and the other signature on the document, Umanu Rav Anan bar Chia. So therefore what happened here is both the Eidim showed up, each one verified his own signature, as well as his friend's signature. That's Rabbi's position in the Mishnah. So why is coming out of Shmuel's Beit Din, is there a document saying that we verified and validated this contract? How did we validate it? By having each one of the Eidim testify about their own signatures, as well as the other party's signature. Ashronihu v'kamnuhi k'dechazi. And therefore we validate and verify that this is a proper contract. He answers, Rav Yehuda, Amalei, ha'u shtar diyat mehavo. That was a case where it was a shtar that belonged to Yitomim, orphans, And Shmuel worried about the fact that there might be other batei dinim that do not know the halacha properly. And since they don't know the halacha properly, they're going to end up ruining the shtar for the yitomim. So though, even though in general we would not afford this protection to everybody, but by yitomim, since they are vulnerable, we are going to do our utmost to do whatever we can to protect them. So Shmuel went out of his way to protect them, even from the possibility of someone making a mistake. What would that mistake be? Sava Shmuel, Dilma Ikas, the Sphere Le Aloch, Garabi Michaveiro, Velo Michaveirav, that there might be someone out there who thinks that, you're right, the principle is Rabbi trumps any other individual, but does not trump a Rabim, or plurality. Ubaha, but in this instance, Afilu Michaveirav. So over here, he would think that the din is different, and here he would even trump Chaveirav, the plurality. Savar, Yavid Ravko, Keichet Lo Mifsede Yatme. I'm going to make sure, I'm going to do a little extra here to make sure that the Yitomim don't lose out. Now, why would you think the halacha here is like Rabbi versus in every other place in Shas where the plurality trumps Rabbi? Why would you think Rabbi wins over here? It's because Rabbi's position makes a lot of sense over here. Rabbi's position is that we're testifying about the signatures, not about the document itself. And over here, that seems to be what Beit Din is doing when they're validating. They're not validating the transaction. They're validating the document. How do you validate the document? By testifying about the signatures. And so therefore, it seems like Rabbi's position makes a lot of sense in this instance. Since it makes a lot of sense, we would have passed like Rabbi even versus the Rabbim. Now, that's not Toev Dvar Mishnah. Because the Toev Dvar Mishnah, we can undermine, we can change, and we can go back on it, even if a date makes a mistake. But here, what's called Toev Shikul Adat. It's a mistake in deciding or weighing different options. And over here, they know the principle that Rabbi doesn't win against the plurality. But they're saying over here, maybe it should be different in this one case, because there's a lot of evidence to the fact that Rabbi's position makes a lot of sense over here. And because of that, they might have supported Rabbi's position improperly, and that would ruin it for the Yitomim. So Shmuel went out of his way to give extra protection to the Yitomim. So not that he believes halacha k'Rabbi, but simply in this instance, he afforded that protection to the Yitomim. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Eid v'dayan mitzdarfim. An Eid and a Dayan can get together. Now this is very interesting. The way Rashi explains it is that over here we have a document which questions have been brought up about it, but this document was already validated in Beit Din. So Tosfot says over here, you can see from here, that you're allowed to question even the validation. I mean that if the borrower comes and says the validation is forged, then you can go to Beit Din and have to verify it again. So in a sense, in the davar sof. So you have to figure out where that ends, but clearly what the Gemara is suggesting, according to the way Rashi explains it, and Tosfot says over here, that's the case. That even in a validation, we worry about the fact that he forged the dayanim, the judge's signatures. And therefore you have to be careful, and he can raise issues about the validation. So what happened here is, he raises questions about the validation, about the document. So one of the witnesses on the document comes and testifies about his signature. One of the dayanim comes along and testifies about his signature on the validation. So what you end up doing is you're validating the document not through the signatures themselves on the document, but by each party saying that the validation is right, and the other party saying that the contract is right, but each one half, or in a sense, one third, the Dayan is testifying about his signature on here and saying it's not forged. And then the aid is saying about the contract that it's not forged. Those two aidim together now can testify about the validity of the contents of the contract, like the Rabbanan say over here. They're not testifying about their signatures. They're testifying about the fact that whatever's in this document is valid. Well, if a person verifies his signature on the contract and the Dayan verifies his signature on the Kiyum Ashtar, on the validation, then now I have two Edim saying that this contract is good. And that's what the Rabbanan require. And that's what Shmuel says over here. An Eid and a Dayan can get together to validate the validation or the contract itself here. Amar Rami Bar Chama Kama Malya Hashmatado. Rami Bar Chama says, wow, whatever Shmuel's saying here is really great. Amar Rava Mamalyuta. What's so great about what he's saying here? Maideka Masayid Sada Loka Masayid Dayono. Maideka Masayid Dayono Loka Masayid Sada. What's the big deal? It makes a lot of sense here that this works. Because whatever the aid is testifying about, the Dayan is not testifying about. And whatever the Dayan is testifying about, the aid is not testifying about. Because the Eidei Ashtar are testifying about the contents of the Shtar. And the Dayanim are testifying about the fact that there was a Kiyum Hashtar over here. So what's so great about what Shmuel said over here, that aid vidayan mitzarfin, that they get together. Because it's not like you have the witness and the judge collaborating or colluding over here. That's not what's happening. Each one of them is giving independent testimony about a different piece of the transaction. One about the validation, one about the shtar. And there's no overlap between them. They're not acting in concert. They're acting independently. And now I don't have two edim to either piece of the puzzle. And if their testimony of an independent document, you can't bring their testimony together to validate the entirety of the transaction. So based on that, he says, don't listen to these principles that my brother Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel. Obviously, Yechezkel and Yehuda were brothers. And when we said over here, Rabbi Yehuda says this in the name of Shmuel, then he says, don't listen to what he says, because what he's saying over here is not right. You are claiming over here that the Eid and the Dayan can come and testify and validate the document. That's just not correct. They can't do this, because each one is testifying about an independent issue, and we can't bring them together to validate the document. One's talking about the validation, one's talking about the contract, and now I don't have two edim to either piece of the puzzle. If I don't have two edim to either piece of the puzzle, they together cannot justify or allow this to be validated. So Rami Bar Yechezkel, who is Yehuda Bar Yechezkel's brother, says, don't listen to what Yehuda is saying in the name of Shmuel, because it's just not correct. Rabbanai, the brother of Rabbi Chir Bar Abba, went to transact in Sesame Seed. And he says, Shmuel says that an Eid and a Dayan can be mitzdarif. Amar Meimar, kama malyo hashmatado. So again, a Meimar pipes up, similar to what was said on the previous Amud by Abrami Bar Chama before. This is a pretty amazing statement that Shmuel's making over here. So Ravashi then says to Amemar, Mishum de Kalsa Abua Dimech, just because your maternal grandfather praised it, Atanami Bekalsadla, you also are praising it? Because before we had Rami Bar Chama, who says, wow, what Shmuel said is really great. And now here Amemar, who is his grandson, is saying, oh, what Shmuel said is really great. So Ravashi is saying to him, just because your grandfather said it, that's why you're also saying it? Rav already undermined that position. Rav already ruined it by saying that it's just not right. What Shmuel is saying, we cannot agree with. Shmuel says that the Eid and Dayan can be mitzdarev to validate. And Rav says, what are you talking about? Each one of them is testifying about an independent document. And if their testimony of an independent document, you can't bring their testimony together to validate the entirety of the transaction. Because we have no two Eidim that are testifying about one document or one issue here. Each one of them is testifying about a different issue. One about the validation, one about the contract. I can't bring them together. The two shall never meet. And that means that I don't have two Eidim testifying over here. So that's why he criticizes Amemar for copying his grandfather and saying this is a great line like Shmuel. You should know there was an alternate girsa over here. Rashi already discusses it. He says, Ikla Rabbanai the Mizman Shum Shumei Garsinan. Velo Garsinan Di Ikla. With a Dalid. If Rashi says over here that this is an independent case over here, and it doesn't say Di Ikla. That because he went. Because he went would mean that's a continuation of the previous statements of the Gemara. V'lav Rami Amra. And Rami didn't say this. Because D.F. Charlemagne, it cannot be that Rami said this, because he could not be speaking about a Meimar and Ravashi. Because Rami Bar Yechezkel lives way before a Meimar and Ravashi. So it can't be that this is a continuation of the story from before, and that Rami Bar Yechezkel is speaking about and says, don't listen to Yehuda because of this incident. This incident takes place way after the time of Yehuda and Rami Bar Yechezkel. So Rashi says the Dalad that would make it into a conjunction is wrong because it's not a continuation of the previous statement. And that's why Rashi eliminates the Dalad from the Girsa and says, this is an independent statement that comes to the same conclusion that Shmuel's position is wrong. Ravashi says, we uphold Rava's criticism of Shmuel's position, and therefore we do not hold like that position of Shmuel. Am Rav Safra, Am Rabbi Abba, Am Rabbi Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta, Am Rav Huna, Vamrila, Am Rav Huna, Am Rav. Shlosha sheyashvu lekayem et hashtar. Three individuals who sit down to validate a shtar. Shnayim makirim chatimot yidei edim, ve'echad enu makir. Two of them recognize the signatories to the document, so they know who signed it and they know their signatures. Ve'echad enu makir. One of them does not know that, so he can't, as a judge, he cannot sign on a document that says this is validated because he himself cannot validate anything over here. So what should they do? Ad shelo chatmu, before they sign on the validation, they should me'idim bifanav. The other two dayanim should testify in front of the third dayan, v'chotem, and then he will sign. Mishchatmu. On the other hand, once the two dayanim have already signed, ein me'idim bifanav. They can't then go and testify in front of him, v'chotem, and then he signs. So Gemara says, umikazvinen. How can they even write it? V'ha'ama Rav Papi mishmei d'rova. Rav Papi says the name of Rava. Hai asharta de dayane. This validation of the dayanim. Before we have the witnesses come and testify to their signatures, psula, it's no good. Because it looks like you're lying. They wrote up the validation before they ever got any validation. So how could you write up a validation before you have any validation? So too over here, how could it be that they wrote up the asharta d'dayne? They wrote up the validation, and then we're saying it's okay. Because the only thing the Gemara said over here is that as long as they haven't signed on the validation, they can testify to the other dayan. That means that the whole document could be written, the validation could be right in front of them. As long as they have yet to sign on it, then they can testify in front of their friend. What do you mean? How did they write the whole document before they had three dayanim that knew that this was going to be valid? How did they write the whole document? Ella, eima achlo katvu, me'idin bifanav. Before the validation is written, then they can testify in front of him. V'chotem, and then he can sign on it. Misha katvu, once they already wrote the validation, even though they haven't signed on it yet, eima idin bifanav, v'chotem. They cannot testify in front of him and sign it. Shma mina talat. From here you would conclude three things. Shma mina eid nased dayan, that people who are witnesses could also be judges in the case. Because over here, two of the judges turn out to be witnesses. They testify before their third partner, and then they go back to being dayanim, and they sign the document as dayanim. Shma mina dayanim amakirim chatimot yedei dim inam srichim la'anid bifneihem. Number two is, if the dayanim themselves recognize the signatures of the signatories, you do not need eidim to come testify in front of them. They can simply sign the validation with the knowledge that they know that these are the signatures. Ushma minan, the third conclusion is, dayanim shein makirim chatimot yideidim, tzurchim la'id bifnei kol echad ve'echad. That in a case where a dayan does not recognize the signatures on the document, then tzurchim la'id bifnei kol echad ve'echad. Each one of the dayanim then needs to have a dut, a testimony, come before him and validate it. It can't be that they testify to one of the dayanim and then that works for everybody. No, each dayan needs to have his knowledge that this is the signatories here. This is their signatures before he validates the document. Those are the three conclusions that we have over here. There are a couple of little issues to deal with. One is, how does this actually work? We're going to see later on in the Gemara that the Gemara actually asked the question in more in detail. But how does this work over here? You have three dayanim sitting down to validate the document. Two of them stand up to testify to the third dayan. Now you only have one dayan left. So how does that work that you have three dayanim? Now even though in the end Eidna said dayan, but when they're testifying, they're eidim. When they sit down, they're dayanim. So what David is saying is actually the answer of the Ritva, the Rashba. They say exactly that. You could be both at the same time. You could be both be an eid and a dayan. When we say Eidna said dayan, they can function in both roles simultaneously. So when they get up to testify in front of their buddy, who's a dayan, they're also still functioning as a dayan, and the beit din is still intact. So that is the way that it works, according to them. Others suggest that, look, the Gemara suggests later on, they brought in two others. They brought in two other dayanim to sit with their buddy in the meantime, while they testified. And after they finished testifying, they sat down and replaced those two, and they were the three judges. So that's one way to solve the problem. Others suggest that by dinei memonot, we know that a dayan mumche can judge by himself. So it could have been that their buddy was a dayan mumcha, and he was allowed to sit by himself. After they finished testifying to him, then they joined him, and they became the entire beit din. So there are different ways to solve the problem, but it's an obvious question over here, is how is this actually functioning, or how they are beit din? Again, those are the different answers that are given by the Rishonim. The Gemara itself will ask the question and give an answer, and that might be one of the answers here, which is what we mentioned. Number two is, Tosafot here raises the fact that Rav Papi, of Shem Rava, is rejected in other places in Shas. The Gemara does not accept his position in other places in the Shas. Yet over here, the Gemara is asking from his position against our Gemara, even though we don't accept him in other places. Tosafot gives different answers to that. One is the Rabbeinu Tam. Interesting answer, Rabbeinu Tam. The Derech HaShas Lakshot Tafil Midavar Delavi Hilchot Tahalki. Sometimes the Gemara will ask from a position that is not Halacha. It just wants to test and see what's going on. Even though they know that the position is not Halacha, they'll still bring the question from a non-halachic position. That's how the Rabbeinu Tam deals with it. Tosafot gives a second answer, which is the Ri Mi Danpir answers, that it's the difference between l'chatchila and b'diavad. That the l'chatchila, we are choshesh for this position of Rapapi Mishmei Derova, that we don't want it to be Mechzei Keshikra. We don't want things to look bad. We don't want validations written before the judges are actually validated the item. So therefore, we have a bias to not doing this l'chatchila. B'diavad, if the validation was written beforehand and they only sign it after they get the evidence, then we'll accept it. And Rapapi won't stand b'diavad. But l'chatchila, we do want to consider it. And we want to make sure that things look clean. And that there aren't documents written before validations are done. And Tosafot gives a third answer, which is much more technical, dealing with the sugi over there, that we really don't reject Rapapi. And the Gemara there was just rejecting the question, not Rapapi. And they were saying that the cases are different, therefore Rapapi is not relevant over here. But not that we don't accept that position of Rapapi. Obviously, this has nafkaminot, if we paskin like Rapapi or not, l'chatchila. In general, we are choshesh for Rapapi's position l'chatchila because, again, we want things to look good. Even though halachically you may not need to write the asharta, to write the validation afterwards, it just looks much better and people will rely on Beit Din in a much stronger way if they believe Beit Din is acting in a manner that's above board and as clean as a whistle because they know they won't write a validation until they actually validate it. If they seem they're writing the validation beforehand and waiting to sign it, it means almost like they have a foregone conclusion that it's okay before they got any information. We don't want it to look that way. Even though they won't sign the document till they get the information, it still looks bad. And we want Beit Din to have sway with the people because they believe in that which the Beit Din is doing. And now the Gemara goes back and talks about the three conclusions that we just had over here. Matkivla Ravashi. Bishlama Eidna Sed Dayan Shmonina Mina. The three conclusions you brought over here, the one that Eidna said Dayan is clear from this Gemara over here, because two of them testify, and then they sit down and become Dayanim. So we know that they are acting in both positions or both roles. The fact that judges who recognize the signatures of the signatories over here, you do not need witnesses for, maybe that's not the case. Here we have a case where two of them recognize the signatures, and one of them does not. And therefore we have Edim come and testify. Implied in that is if the third guy also recognized the signatures, we wouldn't need any testimony. They each could sign based on the fact that they know it. They saw it and they know it. So Gemara says, this is what Rav Ashi suggests. We do need testimony. Because we are Mikayim, the din of Eidut, with one of the judges. I mean that what Rav Ashi says is you always need Eidim to show up. The question is, how many of the judges need the Eidim? So in a case where all the judges knew the signatures, we won't go without Eidut. We won't go without Eidim here. Our case, we let the other two judges sign because they knew the signatures, because they had testimony to the third judge. And that suffices. As long as we have testimony to one of the judges, that will suffice. But to say that all the judges could sign based on their knowledge of the signatories, that that's their signature, we wouldn't allow that to go through. You need Eidim over here. That's the suggestion of Ashi. Your conclusion is not conclusive. Because it might be that in our case, it just worked out that way. But had it been a case where all three of them knew the signatures, we would not allow that to go through. You would need at least one of them to have testimony. So that's his challenge. Tosafot worries about this challenge and says, wait a minute. We have a principle throughout Shas, especially by Kiddush HaChodesh, which is, how could it be that Re'iyah is worse than Shmiah? Which is that the reason that the judges sit and listen to the Edim is because when the Edim come and testify, now they are made knowledgeable about the situation. If the judge himself knows and sees the information, how could that be worse than hearing? We always know seeing is better than hearing. So if the judge himself knows and sees the signature, and he knows that's the signature, how could that be worse than having two Edim come and testify? The Tosafot over here mentions that maybe that the case is Tzarichim la'id bifneihem mishum depamim ein makirim al yedei sh'ra'u b'layla. Sometimes the judges only know that the signatories, that's their signatures because they looked at it at night. And since at night you can't set up a Beit Din, so then when they saw it, at the time that they saw it, they couldn't be Dayanim. But then they come the next day, and now they're sitting down. Now if he can't see the signature again or he can't validate it on during the day, then he needs a Din to come and testify. So what Tosafot does is comes up with cases where the knowledge or the seeing of the Dayanim wouldn't be valid for them. And you need the Edim to come along. But Tosafot is challenged by this issue and says, Eino Hanami, maybe, we would say that if they actually all sat down during the day and knew the signatures, they could sign it. Even according to Rav Ashi's question. Right? The question is only a case where maybe there are instances where we need testimony, even if they all recognize the signatures, because we can't rely on their ri'iyah. We can't rely on their knowledge, because it happened at a time when they couldn't be a dayan. Now, Tosfot also says that in the end, we also might want edim, is because we want this to look like a beit din. Truthfully, you could validate a shtar with two, but we want it to look like a beit din to give more strength to the validation. And the same thing here. Maybe we want three dayanim sitting with two edim testifying in front of them, so it looks like there's a beit din over here, and maybe that's what Rashi is suggesting. Maybe we want edut here, not because we couldn't do it without edut. We could do it without edut, but we want this to look like a beit din. How do we get it to look like a beit din? You have two edim show up, and you have three dayanim sitting. And maybe that's the requirement that Ravashi has over here. Or as Tosafot quotes from the Rashbam, it just may be a gzeret haketub of amdu shnei anashim, that the two individuals need to stand before the dayanim, and you can only have that take place if the edim are segregated from the dayanim, even though ri'iyah might have sufficed in this instance. Or maybe because Vaikidish HaChodesh says kzere'ei v'kadesh, so therefore there is ri'iyah takes on an added dimension when it comes to Kiddush HaChodesh, but we will not extrapolate that to other cases of Dayanim or Beit Din. So that's one of Ravashi's challenges. The second challenge is, V'dayanim sheim akirim chatimati de'edim tzuchim la'id bifnei kol echad v'echad. That you said over here, when the Dayanim don't recognize the signatures, then you have to have testimony in front of each one of them. Dilma o'me melacha ain't tzuchim. Maybe I'll say generally, they don't need it. V'shani ocha, dolo mekayim mahagod o'klam. And then, based on his previous statement, he says, you know why they had to have witnesses come here and testify in front of that Dayan? It's because they had to have the Din of Edut. So the Din of Edut forced them to have Edim come and testify in front of him. But maybe in another case, the Edim could testify in front of him, and that would be sufficient with the other two Dayanim. You don't need the Edim to come testify in front of each one of the Dayanim. It would be sufficient if they testify in front of one of them, or to one of them, about the signatures, and then the other two Dayanim would be pulled in as Dayanim. But we don't need each one of them to have a separate edut be granted towards them and testify in front of them. Maybe one edut suffices over here, even though the other two parties don't know the signatures. As long as they deem testified to one of them, then that'll be sufficient. He was talking about this issue of Eid Nasa Dayan. Eid Vei Rav Safra the Rabbi Abba. And then Rav Safra raised this issue to Rav Abba. Ro'o Shlosha Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. Three of the Dayanim saw the new moon. Behein Beit Din. But they are the Beit Din. So I have a problem here. They're the Beit Din that's supposed to declare the new moon. Mikudash, Mikudash. But they're also the parties that saw the moon. Yamdu Shnayim. Two of them will get up. Two of these Dayanim will get up and become the witnesses. V'yoshivu mechavrehem etzel yachid. They'll bring in two other judges to sit with their friend. V'yeidu bifneim. And then they'll testify in front of the three judges. V'yomru mikudash achodesh mikudash. And then the three judges that are seated will declare Rosh Chodesh. Shein yachid ne'eman ayudei atzmo. Because an individual is not believed about himself or by himself. So the one dayan they leave behind is not sufficient. And these individuals are edim. So if they're edim, they can't be dayanim. V'yisakadat cho de'ed nase dayan. If you believe that an aid then can become a dayan, what do you need all of this ceremony over here where they bring in two other dayanim and you testify in front of them? Just let them testify in front of the one and they'll function as dayanim at the same time. So lit v'beduktayu likadshe. After they testify, they'll sit down and they'll be the beit din and they'll be mikadish the chodesh. Amrlei af l'didi kashali. So Rav Yava says back to me, you know what? I had the same exact question that you had and it really bothered me. V'sheyote the Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta. And I asked that of Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta. Rabbi Yitzchak, the Rav Huna, and Rabbi Yitzchak asked this question to Rav Huna. Rav Huna, the Chiyar Barav, and Rav Huna asked this to Rav's son Chiyah, the Chiyar Barav, the Rav. And it got all the way back to Rav. I mean, this question was a serious question. And he answered them. Hanach, leidut ha-chodesh deoraito. There's a big difference. Kiddush ha-chodesh, reidat ha-chodesh is min ha-torah. V'kiyum shtarot is mid-rabbanan. And validation of shtarot is only mid-rabbanan. So now, to be honest with you, that can go in two directions. You can go, one direction is that the reason that ain aid that the principle is ain aid nase dayan. And that's the general principle. By kiyum shtarot, which is the rabbanan, we're mekyo and we allow aid nase dayan. That's one way to look at it. Or, you might say that generally aid nase dayan. But by Rosh Chodesh, which is like a super doraita, over there we won't allow aid nase dayan. Because by Eidut HaChodesh, that establishes many halachot midoraita. It establishes when the Moadim are. It establishes when Yom Kippur is. That's a chiyuv karet if you fast on the wrong day or eat on the wrong day. be that there's real issues that come out with Eidut HaChodesh. So over there, we put a higher standard or higher threshold and said we won't accept Eid Naaseh Dayan. It's not clear from the Gemara which way it is. Is it the standard is Eid Naaseh Dayan and Eidut HaChodesh is a super Doraita and that's why we don't accept it? Or the other way around? Is it generally that Eid is not Naaseh Dayan, but by Kiyum Shtarot we were Mekiel because the Shtar itself doesn't need validation from Beit Din, doesn't need by itself the signatures or the signatories to a document validated as if it's a good document, and we shouldn't have to question it. The whole thing that we validate in Beit Din, that's an additional aspect, Mid Rabbanan. So over there, they allowed Eid Naaseh Dayan to ease the process of doing this Kiyum Shtarot, because technically you don't need a Doraita. It's another Kuba that the Chachamim established in Dinei Mimonot in general. So Tosfot, you can see, deals with a little bit of this issue about why Ein Eid Naaseh Dayan. He also raises the possibility that it's a problem of Eidut She'en Ata Yochol Hazima. It's an Eidut that you cannot then have other Eidim come and ruin it. Now Tosfot says the reason that that is because the Dayanim, once they sit down, will never accept the testimony of other Eidim that come and say that Imanu Aitim about the Eidim. They're never going to accept someone else being Mezim themselves. Right, so that's a conflict of interest over here. I don't think that's such a problem, and Tosfot himself agrees that that's not such an issue, because in general, they could go to another Beit Din, and they could be Mezim in another Beit Din. This doesn't inherently make it an Eidut that cannot have Azama. It's just that in this Beit Din, they won't be able to do it, but they'll do it somewhere else, and they will be able to Mezim the Eidim, so he rejects that answer. And then again, he asks the problem of Ri'iyah should be better than Shmi'ah. And if that's the case, why can't these Dayanim in itself sit as Dayanim, but not have to testify? Why do they have to give Eidut? Maybe they could just sit down as Dayanim, and the fact that they saw it is enough. I mean, why is it hearing it from Eidim better than them physically seeing it? And Tosfot says in the end, Eino Chanami. That is true. By Eidut HaChodesh, there's a specific need to have Eidim come and testify about it. That's why we need Eidim over there. But in cases of Dinei Mimonot, we would say if the Dayanim witnessed something, they can function as Dayanim simply by the fact that they saw it. On the other hand, when it comes to Dinei Nefashot, they can't do that. Even if they witness something, they can't act as Dayanim. This is for an obvious reason. I was reading the Tosfot, I said, this gotta be, it can't be this way. Because then they're no Geba Davar. They can never see. If a person witnesses a murder, and then they come to trial, and the judge who's there was a witness to the murder, how could he ever preside over this and see any merit to the other party? He witnessed the murder. So you can't have that. You have to have an independent party who did not witness it, listen to the perspectives or listen to what's going on. So Tosfot says in the end that maybe that this idea of Riyah functioning better than Shmiah for Dayan, which we really do rely on, that works in certain circumstances. It does not work in specific instances like Eidut HaChodesh where we need Eidut. It does not work by Dinei Nefashot where then he can't see any zechut to the individual. But by Dinei Mimonot, Eino Chanami, that if a Dayan witnessed something or saw a transaction, he could still function as a Dayan because he saw it. Hearing it's not going to be better than seeing it. And if he saw it, he can act as a Dayan here and know with the knowledge that he saw or he witnessed something that happened. And again, that difference will also be on a Doraita level versus the Rabbanan. In the Rabbanan levels, we will accept Eid Naaseh Dayan. Doraita level, we will not accept it. And in addition to that, if you have issues, again, whenever we say that before the Ri'iyah is greater than Shmi'ah, that's when the Dayan had the Ri'iyah during a time that he could function as a Dayan. But if he saw it at night, and then he sits as a Dayan during the day, his Ri'iyah won't help anymore, because his Ri'iyah was at a time that he couldn't be a Dayan, and therefore it won't function, versus a time where then he'll need Eidim to come and testify. So those are all qualifications of this principle of Eid Naaseh Dayan. Three individuals sit down as a Beit Din in order to mikayim the Shtar. And then questions arise about one of them. We'll go with Rashi's pshat over here, one of the Dayanim. Ad shelo chatmu, before the Dayanim sign on the validation, me'idim alav. The other two Dayanim can come and testify that this individual is kasher. Somebody raised an issue about the kashrut of this Dayan. The other two Dayanim can go and testify on his behalf because they have yet to be Dayanim signed together on a document. V'choteim, and then they can sign. Mishachatmu, if they already signed on the document, the two Dayanim, and now the third Dayan, there's questions raised about him, then Eid Me'idim Alav. The other two Dayanim can't testify about the third Dayan because clearly there, it looks like they are Nogeya Badavar. Rashi says, Nogeya Be'idut Sh'gnai Lahem Sh'ishvu Im Psul B'din. Because then it looks like they sat down with a guy who was Pasul. So when they come and testify, they're really protecting their own honor in a sense that they sat down with a Dayan that was problematic, or The problem is that they signed on a validation that shouldn't have been validated. And so now they're problematic, not because it's just a gnai, but because they signed on something that they shouldn't have signed on. And they're coming to protect their signature by testifying on the third party over there. So once they've signed, they cannot be a party to testifying about the third dayan. Before they sign, they're allowed to do that. What was the question that was raised over here? If it was the fact that two Adim came along and testified that this guy was a thief, the third guy, that Dayan was a thief, then why does that help that they testify? They're two, the judges are two, and Arar, or an Ir-Ur, can only be done by two Adim. So two Adim come and say he's a Gazlan. They show up and say that he's not a Gazlan. You have a stalemate over here, and he is Lomit Kasher Ba'achi, Rashi says. He's not Kasher. So that doesn't help you. So that can't be the case. Arar to become Mishpacha. If it's a question about the validity of his familial line, his yichus over here, then gilui milto ba'amo. It's not testimony. It's just clarification of an issue. And Rashi says that's because it's something that will be revealed in the future. Edut is only about something that nobody else knows or nobody else can clarify. But if this is something that in the future will be figured out, and all you're doing is accelerating it by bringing us the information today, then it's called a gilui milto, not edut. And so why are they nogeva davar here? They're just revealing to us something that can be verified or checked by independent parties or independent sources later on. That statement of Rashi is amazing because it's not so clear. That's a very, very wide net to cast for gilui milto versus edut. Just because something in the future will be known, why does that make a gilui milto and not edut? And you could ask many questions on that, as many do. Like Tosafot, they ask questions on that shita of Rashi. My answer's up. It was a question about the fact that he was a gazlan. Vikamre. And the others, the two dayanim say, Hane yadin be davad tshuva. The dayanim say, we know he did tshuva. So they're not stalemating with the edim, because they are saying, yes, he might have stolen, but he did tshuva, now he's a kasher. And that's why they are believed over here, versus the other two who say that he is a gazlan. So that's the solution to the problem. That's Rashi's explanation of the Gemara over here. The Rabbeinu Hananel has a totally different version of the case over here. Rashi over here says it's the two dayanim that are coming to testify about the individual, and that's what the question is over here. These two dayanim that are coming to testify, why do they help? The Rabbeinu Hananel reads it differently, and he says, and Tosfot quotes it, and thinks that this is a better way to read the Gemara because of the difficulties in Rashi, but rather he says that, and again, Nirad Perish Rabbeinu Hananel, Dolari be'idut dayanim el be'idut acherim. It's the testimony of the other two parties over here. The question is about the questioners, which is that two Adim or independent Adim come and testify. When do they testify? If they testify about the individual that's here who signed on the document already, and they come and bring a question about that he's a Gazlan, why should it matter? We have the two Dayanim defending him. You have the two outside Adim saying that he's problematic. It's Uki Trey the Gabi Trey and Ukme Gavra Acheskar Kashrut. Person has a chazaka of being a kasher, then the stalemate here, not like Rashi says, makes him not kosher. The stalemate over here makes him kosher because his chazaka is that he was a kosher individual. Therefore, the ir-ur of gazlanuta doesn't help over here. It doesn't ruin his standing. And so why can't the dayanim defend him in that way and keep his chazaka in place? If it's an ir-ur of begam mishpacha, it's a gilui milto ba'almo, here Tosfot has a difficulty because if you go by chazaka, if they say he was an eved, then his chazaka is not being a kasher. And the person who's trying to change it actually has the obligation over here. Therefore, Tosfot says over here, they were mazim the edim. It wasn't a chasha. The second the dayanim come and say imanu aitim, or they say something that ruins those edim entirely. So that's why it wouldn't be anything, because it's a gilui milta, meaning that they are taking away the whole edut over here. They're not even talking about his status. They're ruining the status of the edim. So the Gemara says, and therefore he's not kasher. The case is here that the two Adim come and say he's a Gazlan. The other two Dayanim say, you know what? He was a Gazlan, but he did tshuva. You know what the common denominator between all four of those Adim is? He was a Gazlan. So now I have four Adim testifying agreeing that he's a Gazlan. Two of them saying that he did tshuva. Those two can't change it. That means he's not kasher, and it's no good. Now the whole question, according to Rabbeinu Hananel, is not like what Rashi says. Is this Dayan kasher or not? The question is, did you have a moshav Dayanim? When these Dayanim sat down, were there really three Dayanim? And was it classified as a moshav Dayanim? And so the question is, when were the issues raised over here? If the issues are raised prior to their sitting, Then when they raise the issues and they invalidate him and then revalidate him, then when they sign, they have a Moshe Abdayanim because he's already validated. For instance, the case where he did tshuva. Case where he did tshuva, yes, he was a gazlan, he did tshuva. Now when we sit, we're three Dayanim. But if in the case where they already signed, and then they come along and say he was a gazlan, and they said he did tshuva, the problem is when they sat as Dayanim, he was a gazlan. He did tshuva now, that's after the fact. That doesn't help him in terms of the Moshav Dayanim. We need the Moshav Dayanim to be when they were all valid. And that only happened after they signed. That means when they sat down together, there were questions about this individual.
The question wasn't raised until.
Okay, but then they can't test. The other two Dayanim can't testify about it because they don't help. Their testimony at this point doesn't help because they can't make it into a Moshav Dayanim retroactively. They have to make it, it had to have been a Moshav Dayanim then. Just because he's kasher now doesn't make it that they were Moshav Dayanim before. And same thing here, when you have trey u'trey, when two and two come and they claim, two claim that he's a gazlan, and the other two say no, then this individual, they have a stalemate, and he has a cheskat kashrut. If he has a cheskat kashrut, then when he sat with the other Dayanim, it was a Moshav Dayanim, because we don't have anything that undermines his status right now. So what the Rabbeinu Chananel says is that the whole question here revolves around whether you had a Beit Din at the time. Did you have a Moshav Dayanim? If there are problems with this individual, even if they're cleared up afterwards, then you didn't have a Moshav Dayanim when they sat down. If there were questions raised, but the questions are not good enough to undermine his status, then you did have a Moshav Dayanim. And that's the question that is being raised over here. And then the Chatima has to do not with the fact that they're Nogea B'Davar, like Rashi says, that the Dayanim are testifying whether they're Nogea B'Davar. It's simply a question of, did they have a Moshav Beit Din or not? Before they sign, then if you clarify and clean up everything beforehand, then they have a Moshav Dayanim. If you're only clarifying it up after the issue, then when they sat down, they weren't necessarily Dayanim, because there were questions about this guy. And he wasn't a Dayan at that time, because he had questions. And then if you clear it up afterwards, that doesn't help you, because at the time that you sat, you were not a Moshav Dayanim. And that's the way the Rabbeinu Kanano explains the Gemara. Okay, we're going to stop over here, four lines down on the top of Chav Bet Amud Aleph.